Things are heating up in Russia's war on Ukraine.
Putin's spy chief, Sergei Naryshkin, warned on Wednesday that Russia would punish any NATO states that help Ukraine with strikes.
New tactics on both sides in anticipation of the incoming Trump administration.
This is all posturing and trying to make sure that they're in the best position possible when and if negotiations begin.
Today is Wednesday, November 20th, and this is The Issue from VOA. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
Air raid sirens in Kyiv Wednesday as the United States closed its embassy in the Ukrainian capital. Warning of a specific risk of a potentially significant air attack, Lucy Fielder with Reuters brings us details.
It told its citizens in Ukraine to be ready to swiftly seek shelter. The Italian and Greek embassies said they had also closed their doors, while the French embassy remained open, but urged its citizens to be cautious. Moscow has criticized the decision by outgoing US President Joe Biden to let Ukraine use US missiles to strike into Russia, having warned for weeks it would see such permission as a major escalation. And on Tuesday, President Vladimir Putin lowered the threshold for a nuclear strike in response to attacks using conventional weapons. Russia said Ukraine fired US ATACMS missiles into its territory early on Tuesday morning, and suggested that the United States must have helped the strikes with satellite data, targeting, and military personnel.
We aren't surprised by...
Washington did not immediately address those assertions, but rejected, quote, more of the same irresponsible rhetoric from Russia. Putin's spy chief, Sergei Naryshkin, warned on Wednesday that Russia would punish any NATO states that help Ukraine with such strikes. Biden has also approved provision of anti-personnel landmines to Ukraine, a U.S. official told Reuters. That's aimed at halting the advance of Russian ground troops in the east. The war is at a volatile juncture, and the rising tensions have stirred concern of a global confrontation. A fifth of Ukrainian territory is in Russian hands, and North Korean troops are deployed in Russia's Kursk region. There are doubts over the future of Western aid to Ukraine as U.S. President-elect Donald Trump returns to the White House.
That was Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder reporting.
Also on Wednesday, Ukraine fired British Storm Shadow cruise missiles into Russia for the first time. It's the latest new Western weapon that it's been permitted to use on Russian targets a day after it fired U.S. ATACMS missiles. The strikes were widely reported by Russian war correspondents on Telegram and confirmed by an official on condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to speak publicly about it. At a press briefing in Copenhagen, Ukrainian Defense Minister Rustem Umerov would not say what weapons had been used on Wednesday.
We are using all the means to defend our country, so would not go into detail, but we are just sending that we are capable and able to respond.
He also said the Russian onslaught was overwhelming.
Daily we are being hit by artillery shelling from the Russians, up to 30,000 shells per day. More than 100 different attacks, kamikaze attacks per day, more than 100 different types of missiles, hypersonic ballistics per day.
Another development on Wednesday was the announcement that the United States is going to allow Ukraine to use U.S.-made landmines in an attempt to slow the Russian advance. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin.
Because the Russians have been so unsuccessful in the way that they have been fighting, they've kind of changed their tactics a bit, and they don't lead with their mechanized forces anymore. They lead with dismounted forces who are able to close and do things to kind of pave the way for mechanized forces. So that's what the Ukrainians are seeing right now. And they have a need for things that can help slow down that effort on the part of the Russians. They're fabricating their own anti-personnel landmines right now. The landmines that we would look to provide them would be landmines that that are not persistent. You know, we can control when they would self-activate, self-detonate, and that makes it far more safer eventually than the things that they are creating on their own.
So pretty much everyone, Lori, seems to be on the same page about the fact that this conflict is amping up and becoming more tense.
And you know, Biden administration officials have said they're very determined to help Ukraine as much as possible before President Biden leaves office. They announced the U.S. intends to cancel half the debt Ukraine owes to the country. And they also announced a new round of military aid.
There are a lot of moving parts right now. So joining us to help us try to make sense of these new developments is Jim Townsend, adjunct senior fellow in the Center for a New American Security, Transatlantic Security Program.
Will any of this turn the tide?
It's rare for one system to turn the tide. Usually it's a number of different systems taken together. If applied, you know, an offensive that is tactically sound and this type of thing, that can turn the tide. But right now in Ukraine, so far, we've provided, you know, Abrams tanks, F-16s, HIMARS, and now, of course, the use of the ATACMS long-range missile, as well as other equipment, both from the U.S. and from Europe. You know, all of these things taken together are enabling Ukraine really to hold the line. And I think the most important thing about the ATACMS is that they're going to be needed to blunt this Russian offensive that is beginning to come together to try to get the Ukrainians out of Kursk. You know, using these long-range missiles, if they're used hopefully beyond Kursk, still unclear whether these are limited to just Kursk or into Russia outside of the Kursk, you know, salient there. If these can be used to impact the logistics that the Russians are going to need to be able to use to mount their offensive into the Kursk, if these missiles can be used to bomb logistics hubs, as well as some of the air bases that Russia uses, not just for strikes in Kursk, but also to launch drones or other aircraft to bomb these Ukrainian cities the way they've been doing, you know, that would be a tremendous help in this particular situation in Kursk. So to answer your question, they're not going to, you know, turn the tide, if you will, of the entire Russian operation, but taken together with other things that they've been given and used particularly to defend the Kursk salient there, it'll play a critical role. I just wish it had been done earlier, but better late than never.
So a lot of people think that what the strategy is now for both Russia and Ukraine is to simply keep or get as much territory as possible, given the possibility of negotiations when the Trump administration comes in. I read an article today, I think it was the New York Times, said that Russia's just throwing soldiers at the front line. Sort of like they did on the Eastern Front in World War II. Just keep throwing bodies at the front line. Casualties are high, but they're inching forward, and their feeling is every inch they take, they get to keep potentially, should these negotiations come about. Do you agree with that analysis?
Yes, absolutely. I think there's a lot of posturing going on to try to be in the best place on the battlefield, in the best position, if and when negotiations begin. So I think that's absolutely right. I think that's one of the reasons the Russians are attacking that Ukrainian salient, you know, into Russia. They want to make sure that when they sit down at the table, that the Ukrainians don't possess any part of Russia, that they're not in control of something that might become a bargaining chip on the table. So they really want to clear Ukraine out of the Kursk salient. And like you point out, on the east, they're throwing Russian soldiers continually, and they have for months, to try to gain as much of those of that Donbas area as they possibly can. And, you know, I think when you talk about throwing Russian troops at the problem, that's what they're doing with the North Koreans, too. Those North Korean troops, they're just going to be cannon fodder. And so they're going to be thrown into the meat grinder in the Kursk salient. And they're going to experience a lot of a lot of casualties as well. But your point's very well taken. This is all posturing and trying to make sure that they're in the best position possible when and if negotiations begin.
Well, it does seem like the war is at a very volatile juncture. Where do you think this is going?
Well, I mean, that's the question that everyone is asking, and we're going to have to wait and see. For sure, Trump and others of his appointees have said that they're going to end that assistance. Biden, I think, released a package today of additional security assistance going to Ukraine. But the thinking is that pretty soon after taking office, Trump will have to deal with this point about continuing the assistance or not. And the question becomes, too, well, is he going to do that for free? In other words, is he going to just, as a gift to Putin, withhold U.S. assistance to Ukraine and get nothing for it? Or will Trump say, look, this is my plan. I'm going to withhold assistance, but I'm not going to do it for free, Putin. I'm going to use this as leverage, and I want some things out of you, too. I mean, is this going to be part of trying to lay the foundations for what will be negotiations? And this particular bit of it would be leverage over Russia to make concessions as well. There's lots of speculation, lots of ideas. We just are not going to find out until he takes office and then actually does something. But I'd be really surprised if he's going to turn off the assistance and not get anything from it. I think he's going to use it for leverage on Russia in terms of a negotiated deal with Ukraine. But we'll have to wait and see.
We've heard a couple of different takes on what happens if the United States scales back or ends assistance to Ukraine. Do you think it's possible that Europe could pick up the slack?
Well, I don't think they'll be able to pick up the slack and completely fill the role of the U.S. I think there's a lot of stuff that's uniquely American, like the ATACMS, although there's Storm Shadow from the U.K. and the Scout missile that the French have. But there's a lot of things in terms of just the volume and the scale of assistance that really is something that we've been able to do out of the U.S. I think Europe will do the best it can in terms of providing assistance. I think there is certainly financial assistance that the EU wants to give. So there is help that's going to go to Ukraine. And Ukraine also, their own defense industry has been able to fill a lot of the needs in terms of drones and this kind of thing. The U.S. Has approved U.S. contractors to go in and do maintenance on a lot of the equipment that they already have. So they're not going to be left adrift. There's still going to be assistance there, but it's going to be more difficult. And I think it's going to eventually lead to sitting down at the negotiating table. I'm not sure when that is. But the U.S. not providing assistance is a blow. And Europe is going to have to really dig in to try to fill the gap as much as they can. But they won't be able to do as much as the U.S. has been able to do.
You know, also on Wednesday, Western embassies, including the U.S. embassy, the Greek embassy, the Italian, Spanish, maybe others, closed today due to concerns of intelligence over a potential threat. How unprecedented is it that in Kyiv, obviously, I should have said, how unprecedented is it for all of these embassies to close today in Kyiv? And what does this say? And what does it potentially mean?
Well, I found that also very interesting. I mean, Kyiv has been under threat and has received strikes in the past. It sounds like they must have gotten some intel that said that the embassies themselves might be targeted. I mean, I can only assume that's what they came up with. But we'll have to see what happens tonight and then in the days to come. But I think that certainly Putin putting the West on notice that providing ATACMS as well as other assistance is not going unnoticed in Moscow. And I think they're going to say, well, if you're going to do this, you're going to feel the effects of this war as well. So I think it's definitely a signal. We'll have to see. I hope they release what the intel was. But I think a lot of people sat up and took notice that suddenly Western embassies had to close based on some knowledge they had about these future strikes. So we might be seeing more of this as the Russians really act out their displeasure at things like ATACMS and Storm Shadow being provided to the Ukrainians.
Jim, thanks so much for the time.
Well, you're very welcome. Anytime.
Jim Townsend, Adjunct Senior Fellow in the Center for New American Security Transatlantic Security Program.
Pretty much, you know, what everybody has been saying is what we just heard from Jim. The two sides, Ukraine and Russia, are trying to get and or keep as much land as they can in anticipation of some kind of negotiation, successful or not, when the new U.S. administration takes office.
And really, like you said as well, and as we talked about earlier, no one really knows what the outcome will be and where this is all headed. And of course, we will continue to bring you all the updates as we get them every day. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for all your news, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on our website at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London. We will talk to you tomorrow.